talks like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animal, talking animal, talking animal. Must be an animal. Come hear the animals. Talking animals. Talking animals.
Good morning. This is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and my guest today is Keegan Kuhn, half of the filmmaking duo behind the award-winning documentary Cowspiracy, The Sustainability Secret. Kuhn and Kip Anderson have reteamed for their new film, What the Health, which is a cinematic offering that seems enormously timely, especially in light of what's been going on in Washington as Trump Care has been unveiled. Exposes the collusion and corruption in government and big business that's costing us incalculable healthcare dollars, widening out to explore other issues in its investigation of leading health organizations and more. We'll hear more about What the Health and some of the more jarring revelations presented in the documentary on the eve of a 4-day window to watch the film online when I speak with Keegan Kuhn in a few moments here on Talking Animals. Later, I'll speak briefly with Aaron Greenwood, formerly the animal welfare editor at the Huffington Post, now a contributor to the Washington Post Animalia website, the Today Show website, the Dodo, and elsewhere. We'll discuss the newly available 2016 statistics for the animal shelter that PETA operates, particularly the facility's adoption and euthanasia figures. Right now, though, let's get to Keegan and What the Health, with a reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj@wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. Let's welcome Keegan Kuhn back to Talking Animals. Good morning, Keegan.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us on Talking Animals this morning.
Thank you for having me.
So first, I think it's practically incumbent on us to initially spend a moment or two discussing Cowspiracy, the documentary in which you and your partner, Kip Anderson, explore the impact of animal agriculture on the environment and cover on some unsettling truths along the way about noted environmental organizations. Looking at Cowspiracy now, what is your view of that film's impact and the acclaim that it generated?
You know, the impact of Cowspiracy has been pretty amazing. We've seen the film go around the world. It's been translated into 25 languages, dubbed into 4. It's on Netflix Global, so anywhere that Netflix is in the world, you can watch the film. And more than likely in your native language. We've seen the film shown at the European Union Parliament, the Italian Parliament, the Austrian Parliament, and beyond. It continues to be an influencer on literally hundreds of thousands of people's lives that we hear directly from who have changed their eating habits based on the information that's available in the film. And then we're seeing it starting to shape policies in governments and in environmental organizations themselves.
Well, not a bad day's work.
Yeah, definitely. It's I think what any filmmaker would really hope to do, a filmmaker who's driven by mission, and to have a response has been incredible.
And at the same time, I was thinking about that relative to What the Health, and as gratifying as that kind of response and all the plaudits have been, and to what extent was that very success sort of intimidating for you and Kip when you were pondering the next project? Like, that's a tough act to follow. What do we do now, Coach?
It definitely had that feeling. But when we started working on Cowspiracy, we thought we were going to include more on health, because while we were doing research on the environmental impacts of raising animals for food on the planet, we also were finding out about how detrimental, you know, an animal-based diet can be on cardiovascular system, on diabetes rates, cancer rates. And so we were going to do a whole section in the film, but we realized that there was so much more that we couldn't even cover in a 90-minute film. So we knew that it was the next thing on the plate that we had to do. And amazingly, the information that's in What the Health is even more shocking than what's in Cowspiracy. So while we did have trepidation that we weren't going to be able to match what we did with Cowspiracy, as soon as we got through our research, we realized, oh, it's going to be even bigger.
So it really was more than even just an outgrowth of Cowspiracy. It was sort of an extension of the work you were doing on Cowspiracy, if I follow you.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, it's all so interconnected.
Yeah.
Because what we do to this planet does affect our personal health, and we have a section in What the Health where we talk about the environmental pollutants that are affecting food and how raising animals for food affects human health as well.
But still, I mean, given that in some ways it sounds like sort of all part of a piece from the overall standpoint, and certainly as you and Kip viewed it, among the things that's pretty impressive to ponder is that it would seem it's only been about 3 years between the release of Cowspiracy and the release of What the Health, which must set some sort of land speed record, really, for documentary films.
Well, thank you for that. We did Cowspiracy in only 10 months, which is kind of unheard of when it comes to filmmaking, particularly when you look at the credits of Cowspiracy. It's really just Kip and myself. There's I think, a total of 6 people who actually worked on the film. And with What the Health, we thought we were going to do the film even faster. We thought the film would be out this time last year, and we were doing our best to try and get to that place. But it's a bigger film. It's a lot more moving parts, and so it took a little bit longer. But still, as far as filmmaking goes, yeah, 3 years between 2 feature films is pretty quick, and I'm pretty tired.
Yeah, no doubt. And feel free, as soon as we finish talking, to rest if you can. But because, yeah, I mean, not just feature films, but making documentaries is notoriously a slow process. Even if financing isn't a major problem, and it usually is a major problem, there's shoestring budgets and asking a zillion favors and all these things, and things that require stopping or dealing with red tape or just what any number of things, especially when it's kind of a mission-oriented thing, as you mentioned a moment ago. Talk to me for a moment or two about how you and Kip work so that you're able to produce these significant and ambitious films at such a brisk pace.
You know, we really just, once we start on a project, we go full steam. So it's 12, 15 hours a day, 6 days a week usually. And then we work, it's really just Kip and I. So when we shoot an interview, it's just the two of us, which makes things easier versus having a larger crew. Mm. But that does mean that I'm operating, you know, 2, sometimes 3 cameras, audio, lighting, the whole 9 yards.
Yeah.
But it does keep things fast. And then we have a real desire to get this information out to people. You know, we're filmmakers, but we're also, you know, investigative journalists. And so it's trying to get that story out to people as quickly as possible. And that's a big driver in not lagging in any way and just working as quickly as possible.
Remarkable to me, on top of like the speed that you guys did accomplish, that you'd actually hope to have What the Health out a year ago. But given that mere days ago, the Trump Care plan was unveiled, and I only call it Trump Care because this apparently really bothers the president, What the Health feels just incredibly timely, given everything that's going on and being looked at, just again, with particularly maybe in the last few days. I mean, how does that assessment strike you? And you finished it when you finished it, but in some ways, did you feel like you stepped into a moment where people are paying extra attention to healthcare organizations, budgets, what may go on behind the scenes?
Absolutely. It's one of those amazing things that happened with Cowspiracy as well, as right on the verge of the COP21 climate talks in Paris, when Cowspiracy went up on Netflix, and now with healthcare change and debate, is absolutely perfectly timed for What the Health released. It's really interesting, though, because part of the whole discussion when it comes to healthcare that is left off is prevention. We're always talking about the cost of treating people with disease versus talking about, well, how do we stop these diseases in the first place? And diet is by far the biggest factor when it comes to prevention and even reversal of chronic diseases that are costing Americans trillions of dollars.
Well, I want to get into that in a particular moment of the film that, I mean, among many sort of revelatory things, this to me just jumped off the screen. But first, let me let folks know this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. If you just tuned in, my guest is Keegan Kuhn, half of the filmmaking duo behind the award-winning documentary Cowspiracy, The Sustainability Secret. Their new film is What's the Health? If you'd like to ask Keegan a question or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663, email dj@wmnf.org. or text 813-433-0885. And before we get into that thing I alluded to, I guess I should mention that for those of us trying to stave off deep, profound cynicism these days in light of the policies and decisions of the Trump administration, some of the info presented in your film sort of can't help, I guess, but pose an extra challenge to stave off that cynicism. I mean, there's some fairly disturbing things and links that we'll get into in a moment. But if you're at all wide-eyed or still trying to remain wide-eyed, it's a tough go.
Yeah, the film definitely exposes some of the darker underbellies of what's going on in business, in the government, and even these health organizations that we have all come to trust for advice on how to prevent disease. But I think ultimately it is an uplifting film because it shows us that we all have power.
Well, that's the thing. Another thing we'll get into hopefully later is some of the profiles of people that you include who are, when we first meet them at least, struggling with one or more medical challenges of note, and related to that are on a tray full of meds. And well, we'll come back to that in a moment. But I guess the thing I was alluding to is, as much as I should probably ask some overview questions further about what the health, and we'll get into that along the way, I'm sure. But I just am so compelled to dive into the middle of the film, by which I mean the interview with Dr. Robert Ratner, the Chief Scientific and Medical Officer of the American Diabetes Association. To me, it was among the most striking few moments of the film. Maybe you could set the scene for us and then describe that interview, sort of what the upshot might be.
Yeah, so we, while doing research on the film, we interviewed a number of specialists and researchers, and we looking at the role of meat and dairy consumption on the development of type 2 diabetes. And so we wanted to talk to the American Diabetes Association about why they recommend eating animal products, particularly processed meat, on their website when there's a direct correlation between that, the development of type 2 diabetes. And we finally did get an interview with Dr. Ratner, as you said, as, you know, Chief Medical Officer for an advisor for the American Diabetes Association. And when, as soon as Kip asked him about the role diet played in diabetes, he didn't want to answer the question. And in fact, I'm quite hostile with us. And it was a simple question, well, what's the role of diet in diabetes? And when we brought up the fact that there was two studies done that compared a low-fat plant-based diet compared to someone eating the ADA-recommended diet, that the plant-based diet was almost three times better at controlling and even reversing type 2 diabetes than the ADA-recommended diet. And as viewers will see in the film, his response was highly emotional, and he ended up storming out of the interview. And it sent a really powerful message to both Kip and I that we were messing with something bigger than we even thought ourselves. And that really kind of changed the whole course of the film. From that point on, we started to do deeper investigation on, and why is it that when everybody knows that heart disease is linked to consumption of red meat and that a high cholesterol diet is associated with cardiovascular disease, why is it that the American Heart Association has an entire section for beef recipes and egg recipes and chicken recipes on their website? And looking deeper into funding and what they may or may not be involved in.
As you kind of noted there, it felt like, in watching it, that it was a pivotal scene and pivotal interview, not the least of which that it was roughly and abruptly ended by Dr. Ratner. But even before he did officially end it, when he was already up and kind of upset, Kip continued to talk about studies and research, and then Dr. Ratner seemed to be dismissive of those, saying, well, you know, those aren't peer-reviewed. And then Kip, obviously really well-armed with great info coming into it, cited things that were peer-reviewed, which then I think really seemed to send Dr. Ratner around the bend, apparently for the final time that day. It was really sort of striking, and then what followed, as jarring as some of those things were, made sense in that context.
Absolutely. And, you know, Dr. Ratner is involved in looking at all the new information and research that's coming out about diabetes. And so I have to believe that he is familiar with these studies, particularly since they pertain directly to the American Diabetes Association. And his refusal to even acknowledge those studies or to try and dismiss them as if they weren't peer-reviewed when they're published in the National Institutes of Health, or published in the, you know, American study or the European study of diabetes, in prestigious publications and organizations. And that kind of refusal to look at information, to me, is pretty disturbing.
And along those lines, I mean, collusion is a word we hear bandied about a lot these days, and it's still unclear exactly what has happened in association with Putin and other Russian figures. Your film identifies clear-cut collusion at what might be considered leading health organizations. Again, we talked about Dr. Ratner with the American Diabetes Association, but also the American Cancer Society, the American Heart Association, Susan G. Komen, et cetera. And it's really what I guess sort of considered two-tiered collusion, as it turns out. But maybe you could sort of just address the financial links and maybe what the Dr. Ratner interview sent you off further investigating and what you turned up.
Absolutely. When after the interview with the American Diabetes Association and his response, we started to question, you know, why wouldn't they want to talk about diet? Why are they recommending these, you know, unhealthy foods? And so we started to look at, well, where is their funding coming from? And we uncovered that the American Diabetes Association is receiving hundreds of thousands of dollars from meat and dairy companies. It goes the same for American Heart Association, American Cancer Society, the Pink Ribbon campaign by Susan G. Komen. I mean, Susan G. Komen, for example, is receiving tens of millions of dollars from Yoplait yogurt, which is a product that, when consumed by women who have had breast cancer, and can increase their chances of dying from the disease by 49%. So these are directly linked to increased rates of death and disease. And so you would think that's a major conflict of interest. You know, how could the American, it would be like the American Lung Association taking money from Philip Morris. Everybody would cry foul play that you can't do that. Clearly that's got a conflict of interest. And yet this exists. And as you said, it is two-tiered because they're not just receiving money from the companies products are associated with the cause of these diseases, but they're also receiving millions of dollars from companies who make money from the treatment of these diseases, so the pharmaceutical industry. We're talking tens of millions of dollars by each of these organizations that are coming directly from people and companies who are making billions of dollars off of diseases that they're supposed to be trying to stop. So again, that would be a huge conflict of interest, and it's something that we go into in the film and raises, you know, some pretty major red flags about our support and trust of these organizations.
And also, too, the parallel between if the American Lung Association were taking a big wad of dough from Philip Morris, you would say, well, Jesus, that doesn't make any sense. But I mean, first of all, that would presuppose that you would know it. You would be aware of it. I guess among the things that are significant about your film, What the Health, is that these links are very well hidden. And again, for example, the diet and issues that go with, you know, high cholesterol and other things. I think the figure that's cited in there is, you know, there's a $35 billion statin industry. So you guys draw a very clear line between why Merck and Pfizer and Lilly and Johnson & Johnson, Abbott, et cetera, have a lot at stake and pouring some money into making sure that people don't really feel inclined to alter their diet in a way that maybe would make it less necessary for statins or remove the need for statins altogether.
Yeah. I mean, these are financial institutions. They are interested in making a profit. And if they can make money off of selling drugs to people, then that's what they'll do. I don't necessarily think that these are the people who work for these companies are bad people. I don't think people who work for these organizations are bad people. But I think they're caught up in a very broken system that puts money and profits above people's health, the health of the planet, and the health of the animals that people eat. So it's definitely a deeply rooted, broken system. But I think that it's absolutely changing and is going to change.
That's great that you have that kind of optimism in light of how deeply entrenched many of these things are and how slow and resistant to change those things typically are.
Yeah, you know, I think we are in a new era right now. You know, as you've talked about, you know, Trump care, which I like that. I think we've been lulled into this belief that the government and large organizations and even corporations are going to take care of us and have our best interests in mind. But I think what we are coming to the realization is that we can't depend on the government to change things. We can't necessarily depend on the organizations that we think are trustworthy to look out for us, that it is about our own selves. And that if we want to make changes, it's going to have to come down to our personal lives and our personal decisions. And though that can be disheartening and for some really disempowering, I think what it truly does though, is it reminds us of our power, that we have the ability to change the healthcare system by what we do with our own lifestyles, whether how we eat, how we live, our lifestyle habits. And that's something we have a choice every single day, and so that we can take back that power and no longer relinquish it to those who have had it or who we feel have held it for so long.
Well, again, you see that in more than a few ways in the film, including, again, the people I alluded to that have decided to make some changes just personally and transformations, in one case at least, in a very short period of time is pretty remarkable. So let's get some callers involved here. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Keegan Kuhn.
Yeah, man, I want to thank you for doing real journalism, is what these documentaries are, deep investigative journalism. And, you know, there's all these embedded memes, disaster capitalism, when things are going bad for people's health, when hurricanes hit, when poorly planned cities create bad health and bad social structures. A lot of people happy to profit. All of these people in these so-called charities, they're profiting off of disaster. I remember when I think Christopher Hitchens called Mother Teresa a poverty pimp. But I'd like you to comment, if you know about this, and I think you probably do, about the Trump administration being stacked, not in the official staffing in some cases, but in Trump's inner circle of advisors, with people who promote animal cruelty, factory farming, and who are intent on rolling back all regulations that prevent cruelty to animals, including pet animals.
All right, thank you for your call. Go ahead, Keegan.
Yeah, you know, it's not just the Trump regime, though. It has been a long history of politicians and politicians who have been bought off by large industry, particularly animal agriculture industry, who have fought animal welfare legislation and who have put into place laws like the Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act, which makes it a felony to disrupt the business of any business that uses animals. In fact, you can be charged as a terrorist for saving a chicken from a battery egg farm. Or laws like the ag gag laws that exist in a number of states around the United States that make it illegal to document the cruelties being committed against animals and the destruction of the environment, even if you're filming in a public space. So, for example, a few years ago, a National Geographic photographer was arrested after taking aerial footage of a feedlot in Kansas. So this is something that has existed in U.S. government for a long time, again, because it's about business, it's about making money. I think, again, this really comes back to the power that we all have, that when we no longer support these industries and when we advocate strongly for others to no longer support these industries, it sends a very powerful message to those in power, those in the heads of these companies, that we're not going to support what they're doing any longer. And I think that's the only place we're ever going to see change. I maybe have a cynical view of the government in that I don't believe that they are working on the behalf of the people. I think they're truly working on the behalf of their own self-interest and corporate interests. And so it's going to come down to all of us working together and standing up for what we feel is truly right.
Indeed. And let me let folks know again, this is Talking Animals with Duncan Strauss. My guest is Keegan Kuhn, one of the filmmakers behind the award-winning documentary Cowspiracy, The Sustainability Secret. Their new film is What's the Health, which can be watched online starting tomorrow. And we'll find out some details about that. We invite you, meanwhile, to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj@wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. Well, there's so much, and to sort of cover what we can, obviously, in our allotted time, but maybe you could describe checkoff programs, what they are, and how they work.
Yes, federal checkoff programs are a federal program that have been set up to promote industries. So they're primarily, you know, there's an egg checkoff program, a pork checkoff program, beef checkoff program. Pretty every animal product has a checkoff program. What they are is they are essentially a imposed tax on industry that they all have to pay into that is then used to promote and further those industries. So everyone's familiar with the beef, it's what's for dinner, or milk does a body good, or the incredible edible egg campaigns. Those are all paid for by the federal checkoff programs. So we're talking about tens of millions of dollars and sometimes hundreds of millions of dollars that are being pumped into these federal programs to promote eating unhealthy foods. And again, this is something that we see on a daily basis. The federal checkoff programs are administered by the USDA, the Department of Agriculture, who also is in charge of creating the dietary guidelines for Americans. So there's this major conflict of interest where the people who are supposed to be giving us our guidelines and telling us what is a healthy diet that we should all follow are also the people who are in charge of promoting truly unhealthy foods to the American people on a daily basis with a budget of millions and millions of dollars. This is something that most Americans have never even heard of, but we are all painfully familiar with because of the highly successful and highly promoted ad campaigns.
And when you made a reference to egg slogan, a thing that popped into my head that I guess we should talk about too is just that sometimes the revelations in the film go beyond just jarring or unsettling to a much darker place, to the section about the American Egg Board and Hampton Creek CEO Josh Tetrick. I mean, maybe you could talk a little bit about that sort of exchange.
Absolutely. So Ryan Shapiro, who is a national security historian, and attorney Jeffrey Light uncovered documents by using the Freedom of Information Act FOIA requests to get internal documents from the American Egg Board showing that they talked about on their government emails that Hampton Creek, an egg alternative company, plant-based egg alternative company, was perceived as such a threat that they joked about killing Josh Tetrick, the CEO, in their emails. And they even said, you know, maybe we should, you know, pay some of my old buddies to visit him in Brooklyn. You know, a very ominous, threatening email to send. Again, these are government employees who are federally funded that are getting money from these industries who see the alternatives to animal products as such a threat that you would joke about killing someone. I mean, that is the extreme of this industry. And you know, again, these may be what some people would say a couple of bad eggs, no pun intended, that they're on the egg board. But if you're involved in an industry that routinely abuses, tortures, and kills other sentient creatures, well, I can understand when there's a certain callousness when it comes to other human beings.
Yeah, although I guess just for the listeners, we should maybe, I didn't probably do as good a job connecting the dots about this, but Hampton Creek and the CEO, Josh Tetrick, that they were making those half-serious, fully serious, whatever kind of threats they were. Hampton Creek has, among other things, pioneered egg substitutes that are quite highly regarded and obviously taken, therefore, as a real serious threat to the American Egg Board and others whose business it is to sell as many eggs. So that's who they were, and that's the context, I guess, for that kind of email exchange. So let's take another call or two. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Keegan Kuhn.
Hello. One thing I was curious about, this isn't animal-related, but I've seen ads a few times now with, like, the beverage industry talking about how they're supposedly making better choices for people or offering better choices for people. I was wondering if your guests could talk about those ads. They ring really hollow to me, and I guess it's the major beverage folks like Coke and Pepsi that are behind it.
Yeah, you know, these businesses are all in the business of making money, and I mean, it's like putting filters on cigarettes. It doesn't really necessarily make cigarettes any healthier, and so, you know, highly processed sugary beverages aren't necessarily ever going to be healthy for us. There may be a better, a less harmful option. But it's like eating lean meat versus eating, you know, the prime cuts or whatever it may be. I think we all have to be very honest on how we look at our own food choices and look deeper into, you know, what is the motivation of these companies and where is their true interest lie, and it comes down to making money. So I think, you know, getting us as close to eating a whole foods, plant-based diet is where we're going to see the biggest benefit for all of us, both on our personal health, but also for society, for healthcare costs, for the environment. And that's going to be excluding, you know, the sugar beverage drinks.
Cool. All right, caller, thank you for your question, and thanks, Keegan, for your answer. Again, this is Talking Animals on Duncan Strauss. I'm speaking with Keegan Kuhn, who, with filmmaking partner Kip Anderson, has created the new documentary, What the Health, which can be watched online for a brief window starting tomorrow. Their previous film, Cowspiracy, The Sustainable Secret. You're invited to join this conversation by calling 813-239-9663, email dj@wmnf.org, or text 813-433-0885. So we have certainly some more things to talk about, but before we go any further, why don't we get into the online viewing and how that works? What are the details? How would someone that's listening now say, oh yeah, wow, starting tomorrow there is an ability to watch this film online? How do I go about that?
So the film will be premiering online on our website, which is whatthehealthfilm.com, and starting March 16th through March 19th, half of all proceeds are going to be donated to the organization Food Not Bombs, which is an organization that is dedicated to feeding people free, healthy, vegan meals all around North America and the world, with a motivation of promoting peace, ending poverty, and really promoting compassion for everyone. So we're really excited to be partnering with them and promoting. But after those 4 days, it'll still will be available on our website. We have DVDs available. We actually have a cookbook that goes along with the film, and we actually have a companion book as well. So everything can be found at whatthehealthfilm.com. We actually have a thunderclap campaign that's running right now on our website, whatthehealthfilm.com, where people can sign up and help promote this online premiere. So if they're excited about the film, they've watched the trailer, and they want to get as many of their friends to see it as possible, they can put in their email address, their Facebook information there, and it'll post on their behalf on tomorrow to, again, create as big a message as possible.
That's great, and that may tie into one of our emailers, or in this case, actually a texter says, what is the single biggest thing I can do as an individual to get the word out about these issues? So,
yeah, signing up for the Thunderclap campaign. Thunderclap is a really interesting tool. Facebook uses an algorithm that if more than, say, 10 people on your friend list post the same link, Facebook's algorithm says, oh, this is a story of interest, and so they'll put it at the top of your feed. Well, if we get 100 people to do that, or 1,000 people, and at this point we've got over 3,000 people who have signed up for the Thunderclap campaign with a social media reach of over 6 million, that gets the message out to a wide, wide audience and gives the opportunity for more people to be aware of the film, because that's really the biggest challenge for most films, is getting people aware that the film exists in the first place. So we encourage people to sign up for the Thunderclap campaign and then sign up, pre-order the film, or wait till March 16th to download the film or stream the film from our website, whatthehealthfilm.com, and then share it. We can also, through our website, you can organize community screenings, so you can bring the film to your local theater or your community center or wherever you would normally show a film, and that can be done free of charge through our website, whatthehealthfilm.com.
And we should note that the 16th is tomorrow, so for people eager to jump in and eager to watch the film, that possibility is available to you tomorrow. So let's take another call. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Keegan Kinn.
Hello?
Hello, it's you. Go ahead, please. Do you have a question or comment for Keegan?
Yes, actually, this is my first time ever calling into WMNF Radio, and
welcome.
I just wanted to... Yeah, thank you. First of all, the program is wonderful. I just wanted to voice my opinion a little bit here. I'm vegan, and I, you know, live a plant-based lifestyle, and I just wanted to kind of reach out to anyone listening and kind of help people to understand what sources they have as far as gaining this information. I think that the primary underlying issue with, you know, with the disconnect between animal agriculture and our health and, you know, the treatment of animals, both domestic and factory farmed animals, I think that the primary disconnect is from misinformation and lack of knowledge. And I basically think that people need to be properly informed so they can make responsible decisions. And in addition to Cowspiracy, a few other documentaries I highly recommend that I feel like are very necessary to watch are the documentaries Earthlings, which, you know, covers primarily the animal aspect of the animal agricultural industry, and also Forks Over Knives to cover the health aspect. And I feel like it's mandatory for people to watch these documentaries and to become properly informed, because, you know, without that, they're just relying on what they hear on television about the, you know, meat industry and the dairy industry, and, you know, it's all misinformation. So I think that, you know, in addition to that, I just want to mention that to cut out animal products out of your life, it's not a personal choice. A personal choice is defined as a choice that affects you and only you. This is a necessary choice for the survival of our, you know, of the human population, for the survival of all animals, and for the survival of the planet. So
cool.
I just wanted to call in and let people know that there are a lot of resources and that it's highly, highly necessary to inform yourself and educate yourself properly.
All right. Well, thank you. I was for your first call to WNF, that was terrific. We appreciate the information and input. And Keegan, I don't know if you have any comment you'd like to make. And we're sort of nearing the end of our time here, but feel free to comment any way you would like to that caller.
Yeah, you know, I think it's absolutely right. It is about information. It's about spreading information and having information available. That's really our mission for Kip and I while making these films, is that we don't want to dictate to anybody what they have to do. We just want to provide the information, allow people to make up their own minds. And I think that's what we're succeeding at, is just provide the information in a way that is easy to digest for people to be able to check out the sources. So you'll be able to go to whatthehealthfilm.com, click on the facts page, and you'll be able to see every single study and more of the stats and research that was done in the film, so you can link it directly to the original study that is referenced in the film. Because we want people to, this just to be a jumping off point. If you see a film like Earthlings, to look deeper. If you see a film like Forks Over Knives, look deeper. Cowspiracy, again, just these are starting points of information so that we can really educate ourselves, to make the most informed decisions for ourselves, for our families, and for our entire communities as a species.
Great. Hi, we're just at the very end of our time here on Talking Animals with Keegan Kuhn. A quick question or comment if you have one.
I'm also a first-time caller to WMNF. I just moved here from Sarasota.
Welcome.
And in October, I'm a blind individual as well. And I'm trying to figure out where I can find organic gardening sources and stuff like that, because my dad thinks I'm crazy about organic food, trying to get away from meat and stuff that he thinks, he's 91 years old, so he doesn't want to change his diet. And I'm just trying to be healthy, and I really appreciate it. My son, who's 42, has told me about fork over knives. I haven't seen it yet, but I will. But as a blind person and 64 years old, having moved in with my dad and my brother after my husband died, you know, I think this information is vital, and I really appreciate you, Keaton, for having these films out there, and I'm going to see if I can get it on my iPhone tomorrow as a blind individual. Thank you so much, also, Duncan.
Okay, well, thanks so much for your call. That's lovely. Thank you so much. Well, gosh, we got more callers, and we're sort of nearing the end of our time. But, Keegan, let me just ask you sort of very quickly, what outcome do you and Kip hope for with What the Health? What would that look like if things really went the way you guys ideally had in mind?
The big ideal would be for everyone on the planet to be available, this information to be available to them, and to see an end to preventable heart disease, to see an end to preventable type 2 diabetes and preventable cancers, to see a transformation happen through our entire healthcare system where we no longer feel the need to have spend trillions of dollars on healthcare because we aren't sick in the same rate, to see families staying together longer because people aren't struggling to financially pay for their healthcare costs, to see a really transformation that happens both for the environmental world as well, to limit the impacts of animal agriculture's inputs on climate change, on water consumption, on deforestation, on species extinction, and clearly to see the end of suffering of the 70 billion farm animals that are raised and slaughtered every year around the world. Those are the big ideals, but we know that we got to start with every single individual. So to get as many people to watch the film as possible is what we hope to do.
Cool. Well, this is Keegan Kuhn we've been speaking with. The film is What the Health. Again, the website is whatthehealthfilm.com, where you can go to get all kinds of information now. And as of tomorrow, you can go and watch the film online. So, Keegan, thanks so much for joining us again on Talking Animals. Good luck with the film. And I'm sure it'll be just a year or two before the next film is out that we'll be talking about. But anyways, congratulations on another piece of great work.
Thanks so much, Duncan.
Thank you. In a few moments, I'll talk briefly with journalist Aaron Greenwood about the newest adoption and euthanasia statistics for the animal shelter that PETA runs. It'll likely be eye-opening unless you're familiar with this aspect of the PETA operation, or you might have heard a similar conversation Aaron and I had last year. Right now, it's time to step into the Comedy Corner with Jim Gaffigan, a Talking Animals favorite, whose latest special on Netflix, Cinco, is typically terrific. This is a piece called I'm a Manatee from an earlier work of Jim's in today's Comedy Corner. On Talking Animals.
My favorite animal is the manatee, the sea cow. The manatee is endangered with extinction, and I think it's because it's out of shape. It looks like a retired football player. You see the manatee on the Discovery Channel? It's always floating around like, I'm bloated. Too much pizza for me. The manatee is also called the sea cow. Sea cow, that sounds like an insult. It's almost as if the manatee was introduced to the ocean, the other animals were like, who's the new guy? The manatee was like, oh, hi, everyone. You can call me the manatee. Yeah, right, sea cow.
Name's Manatee.
Sea cow, fat ass.
quit it.
I'd love to see the manatee on a show like Ricky Lake. The manatee be sitting there like,
Ricky, I'm here because I'm endangered.
And then one of those mean people in the audience would offer up the advice, yeah, I want to say something to the sea pig. That sea cow, whatever. Sea pig, you a fat seal, you got to get yourself an education and a job. And he'd be like, I live in the ocean. Just so happen you live in the ocean because you ain't got no job. You got to get in Weight Watchers, some kind of program.
I have a layer of blubber to keep my body warm in the water.
Whatever, talk to the hand.
I don't have a hand.
What if a manatee was in the audience? They might laugh, but they'd be crying on the inside. It doesn't look like God tried that hard on the manatee, does it? He's like, all right, blood flip-flops. What the hell? Let's go with a goatee. You know what? I got a golf game. Throw this around Florida. It'll fit in. Hey, I'm from Florida. I don't think God plays golf. I didn't like some of those jokes.
That was Jim Gaffigan with a portion of a piece called I'm a Manatee, taken from his album Doing My Time. And his wonderful new special, Cinco, can currently be seen on Netflix. Now, on to my conversation with Aaron Greenwood about the latest statistics for the animal shelter that Pete operates. Let's welcome Aaron Greenwood back. Hey, Aaron, how are you?
Good, how about you?
Good, thanks for joining us again on Talking Animals.
No, thanks for having me.
You bet. So you're a journalist contributing to the Washington Post, the Today Show website, the Dodo, etc. When we had a similar discussion a year ago, almost to the day, by the way, you had written an op-ed on PETA's then-new shelter statistics. This time, it was just a Facebook post that happened to catch my eye, but what is the root of your interest in PETA's shelter and how those numbers end up?
My interest in it is that I think a lot of people don't know yet that PETA operates this one animal shelter at its headquarters in Virginia, and that almost all the animals who come in die. And it's, I think, very, very surprising to most people. And I think knowing this about them also helps inform sort of how you think about PETA's other work on companion animals. They are, in my opinion, on the wrong side of a lot of companion animal issues. And I think that talking about their shelter is a good way to sort of discuss all those other issues, too.
We'll get into some of those other issues. But I guess we should start at the moment with some of the newly available statistics for their shelter. So maybe you could walk us through some of the key numbers.
Sure. Yeah, they're pretty dismal statistics. Last year, 2,007 animals came into their shelter. Of that, 1,428 of them were euthanized. Only 80 were adopted. That's a 71% kill rate at their shelter. And just for comparison, in Virginia as a whole, the state as a whole has an 83% save rate. So PETA is very much at odds with where the whole state is going.
Wow.
It's fairly surprising. It's surprising for people who don't know PETA's record on companion animals. For
yeah.
those of us who do, it's unfortunately not at all surprising.
Right, because I think, for example, just from when we had a similar talk last year, the numbers are comparable, correct? Or
yeah, they're pretty comparable. Last year, I was pulling up these numbers for you just so I could be prepared. Last year, they had 2,063 animals come in. 1,502 of those were euthanized. 94 were adopted, so that was a 72% kill rate, so at least it's 1% better this year.
But that's still...
No, it's not good.
Yeah, no. Just those alone, I think, are pretty striking, interesting, just on their own merit. But one of the things you said before we got into those that I think is also important to maybe expand on a little bit is what else that means. I mean, what sort of context that might provide or what sort of broader picture that might paint in terms of at least the companion animal side of the PETA operation.
Yeah. No, I mean, I want to start this by saying that PETA does some very good work when it comes to lab animals, when it comes to farm animals. I mean, I think they do a lot of very important work on those issues. When it comes to companion animals, they really are just so far out of the mainstream and so far out of current animal welfare trends that it really kind of blows my mind that they will not move off of this bad path that they're on. But they basically go around the country advocating against no-kill policies. They are in support of pit bull bans, which are just horrible, misguided, you know, cruel laws that ban dogs based on how they look, not on how they act. They are against feral cat management programs that don't lead to the cats being killed. They're against what's called TNR, trap, neuter, return programs. They're just really, really on the wrong side of a lot of these issues. And their policies at the shelter seem to bear that out.
Yeah, well, it's hard if you are an organization that purports to care about animals. And again, they have obviously broad portfolio of issues and campaigns that go well beyond companion animals. But I think a lot of people, whatever their feelings about PETA, and again, PETA, as we talked about many, many times on this show, very polarizing organization. But you know, even if you're sort of not necessarily pro-PETA, I think these numbers are probably a little bit jarring if you're not familiar with how this works. And if you're pro PETA, I think you'd think, wow, this doesn't add up. And much like you, I just want to say that I too think they do some good work. I mean, just locally, something we have talked about also on the show a number of times. I mean, they helped with an investigation of this so-called pig sanctuary, Darlin's, that led to some serious arrests of the proprietors and the pigs being rescued and relocated, and some are still looking for homes now. And I mean, that's just an example of generally in our areas some good work they do. And when I go to conferences, I meet PETA people who are inevitably on the young side. Well, compared to me, probably anybody is, but really bright. Often they're lawyers and they're really impressive people. So it's just, I think for a lot of people that there's some kind of, well, there's a few things. There's kind of an anachronistic element to PETA. It's like I've said a few times on the show, if they were a TV program, they would have jumped the shark many years ago. Yet there's still capable of doing good work, but I guess no matter what, the companion animal thing, it's puzzling.
It's really puzzling. I mean, it seems as if they've gotten entrenched in this way of thinking that maybe made some sense 30 years ago before we'd made such strides in sheltering, before people had really come to welcome rescue animals into their homes the way that they do now. I mean, we've got, I just did a piece last week for the Today Show about how euthanasia rates countrywide are going way, way down. Adoption rates are going way, way up. I mean, we're seeing just wonderfully positive trends as far as that goes across the country. PETA still seems to be stuck in an earlier time when we didn't have such a great sort of, I don't know, since people had started welcoming rescue pets into their home and thinking of shelter pets as being just as wonderful companions as they are.
Yeah. Well, that's what I guess I mean about being sort of anachronistic. I mean, both with and within and outside of the companion animal realm, there's just things where you just feel like they haven't really evolved or kept up with a lot of things. And I see those kind of rates elsewhere go down. And yet, if we have this talk a year from now, I'm going to guess the numbers are going to be within a point or two of where they are now.
Yeah, I guess you were right. I mean, you know what I would love to see from them? Even aside from wanting to see them not treat pit bulls as if they are some exotic species, but just treat pit bulls as if they're the dogs that they are. Forget about their kind of terribly misguided policies more broadly at their shelter. I would love to see them working with rescue groups. I'd love to see them, with a medical program where they get treatment for animals who come in who are injured. I'd love to see them develop a FOSTIS program like there are at so many progressive shelters now where animals who don't have a lot of time left still get to live in a loving home for the time that they do have.
Yeah.
I would love to see them adopt some of these wonderful, heartwarming, life-saving programs that other shelters have. They certainly have the funds to do it.
That's the thing. Among the many things that are puzzling about this is they're certainly not strapped for dough, so they could implement any number of changes, including some of the things you just rattled off there. And but philosophically, they're just not inclined. So.
No, they don't seem to be.
Yeah. All right. Well, Aaron, we're sort of unfortunately out of time, but thank you again. And again, great to have specific statistics to look at, even if they're a bit on the grim side. So thank you again. And
thanks for having
me. We'll talk to you again soon on the show. Thanks so much.
Bye.
Bye-bye. I'm Duncan Strauss. You're listening to Talking Animals, where the show website is talkinganimals.net. It's time to proceed to Name That Animal Tune. This is a giveaway, but please only participate if you haven't won something from WNF in the last 90 days. There'll be a prize, a Talking Animal t-shirt, to the first person who calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal song. It's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals. That's enough of a snippet to identify that animal tune. We have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. Rob Laura is up next with what amounts to 2 hours of radioactivity. I'll be back next Wednesday, March 22nd, when my guest will be Christy Middleton, the Senior Director of Food Policy for the Humane Society of the United States, who's just published her first book, Meatless, Transform the Way You Eat and Live One Meal at a Time. Please visit TalkingAnimals.net for audio archives. We'll be talking to you next week. Duncan Strauss, thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. It's WMNF, Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Weeki Wachee, and beyond. NPR News is next. Thanks.